again? Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach.
It's the seventh day of Unleavened, and really wonderful feast. Like I said, it's been several years since we've been in the complex at Pesach, and really nice, really wonderful feast, and blessed group, and good time. So thank everybody who is here. Thank you everybody for your help with everything. Maybe just when Shabbat is over tonight, if we could get some hands to break everything down and put the stuff back away. And while usually, you know, when we leave here, we have a whole year until we're coming back to Sukkot. So now we'll be leaving and we only have 6 months to here and only 2 months until we meet for Shavuot. So praise Yahweh for that. Alrighty. The name of the message today is called Leaving Behind Your Golden Calf. Great message to give during the days of Unleavened. And I want to start in Jude. There's only one chapter, but verse 5. He says, "But I intend to remind you, though you once knew these things, that Yahweh, having saved the people out of the land of Egypt, in the second place destroyed the ones not believing." And I've talked about this before, even this week. And, you know, most of the time, and it should be, we want to focus on the positive, not the negative. But the reality of it is, when we look at the Exodus, you know, the greatest miracle that Yahweh has ever done to mankind, there's nothing greater in the history of man that Yahweh has intervened than in the Exodus. To literally do the miracles, the parting of the Red Sea, and everything that Yahweh did, and take a nation of somewhere, they estimate, around 2.6 million people, including women and children, and to rescue them without armies, without weapons, without sword. And it's an absolute miracle. But then to think that out of all those people that left of adults, that only Joshua and Caleb enter the promised land, not even Moses. You know, Moses, the man that Yahweh speaks with, you know, face to face, and that is the friend of Yahweh, and everything that he did, not even Moses entered the promised land. And logically, you think to yourself, at least I do, if there was roughly 2 million, give or take, you know, whatever, of adults that were 20 and over, were really all of them that bad? You know? And you would think they'd have to be, because if Joshua and Caleb, who had another spirit, were allowed to enter the promised land, you would think if other people had that same spirit, right, then Yahweh would allow everyone with that spirit to enter. So like I say, to me, this is a frightening scripture, a very frightening scripture, because we're living in the same times today. And like I say, when you look at the Exodus, I believe from the time of the Exodus all the way through the New Testament, the Brit Hadashah, all of the examples of the Exodus are always good examples for all believers. But yet, just like I say, Revelation 2 and 3, the message to the seven congregations, they're messages that every congregation could have benefited for the last 2,000 years, but literally they're written for us. Today, these seven congregations are present, and there's a message in at least one of those congregations to you and to me. And it's the same way with the Exodus. And that's why over the years I've spent a lot of time on the wilderness and learning lessons from the wilderness. Because we are the generation, it says, that all those lessons in the wilderness were written to. And just like that generation, I hope it's not two people. You know, it seems to be more than that. But percentage-wise, the people that will be saved in our day is very minuscule like that day. So when we're talking about leaving behind our golden calf, I think that every one of us really has to look deep in our heart and see, do we have a golden calf? Because the golden calf was the breaking point. You know, I mean, the people did a lot of things wrong. You see it along the way. But the golden calf was really the breaking point where Yahweh had to break covenant with them. So I want to start by going through some of these miracles to really get a mind to look at what they saw. They saw with their eyes, just like when Yeshua walked the earth, right? And here it is. He's doing miracles. He's healing the blind and healing a leper and healing a cripple. And word is going around, you know? And maybe you didn't see it, but you're in the air about Yeshua of Nazareth.
No, I know
a relative of the man that was healed. It really happened. And it's going more and more. And then when Lazarus is raised from the dead, after 4 days, the priests come together and you're thinking, well, they must be coming together to say, this man is the Messiah. We have to give in to him. We have to surrender. But they get together and they say, we got to get rid of this guy. We got to kill him. Because if he keeps going this way, we're going to lose our position. And you're thinking, wow, how evil can people get? That they know it. You know, Nicodemus is a Pharisee, and he comes to Yeshua by night and says, we know you're from Elohim. If you weren't, you could never do these miracles. And yet the answer is, let's kill him. Let's get rid of him, or we might lose our position. So this is what we're dealing with today in this realm. And I'm going to start in Exodus 8. I'll read all through the different plagues that are going on there. I'll skip around some. But I'm going to start in Exodus 8, verse 1. And Yahweh said to Moses, go to Pharaoh and say to him, so says Yahweh, send away my people that they may serve me. And if you refuse to send them away, behold, I am about to smite all your territory with frogs. And the river will swarm with frogs, and they will go up and enter into your house, and into your bedroom, and on your couch, and into your servant's house, and on your people, and in your ovens, and into your kneading troughs, right? I think of just with flies. Have you ever had a, seem like a plague of flies in your house? Or maybe ants? You know, in Israel, anywhere you go, you got thousands of ants. Can you imagine hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of frogs everywhere you go, climbing all over you? I guess it could be worse, it could be rats. I'd probably want that less than frogs, but still, wow. And the frogs will come up on you, and on your people, and on all your servants. And Yahweh said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the canals, and over the pools, and bring up frogs on the land of Egypt. And Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. We drop down to verse 16. And Yahweh said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth, and let it become lice in all the land of Egypt. Wow, I think I'd even want frogs before I would want lice. And they did so, and Aaron stretched out his hand and his staff and struck the dust of the earth. And the lice were on man and on beast. All the dust of the earth became lice in the land of Egypt. And the priests performed with their secret arts to bring forth lice, and they could not. And the lice were on man and on beast. And like I said, Satan is the great counterfeiter, but he can't produce exactly like Yahweh. So in the beginning, the first few plagues, Satan was counterfeiting with magic, but as it went on there, they couldn't. And the priest said to Pharaoh, it is the finger of Elohim. And Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not listen to them, as Yahweh had said. Drop down to verse 20. And Yahweh said to Moses, get up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh. Behold, he is about to go out to the water. And say to them, so says Yahweh, send away my people that they may serve me. And if you do not send away my people, behold, I am about to send swarms of flies on you, and on your servants, and on your people, and on your house. And the houses of the Egyptians will be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground on which you are. And in that day I will separate the land of Goshen with my people resting on it, and there will be no swarm of flies, so that you may know that I am Yahweh in the midst of the earth. Right? So Yahweh now is going to sanctify. He's going to separate where he's not and where he is. Very important for us to understand today, because a message I want to give in the near future is on the mixed multitude. Because remember, one of the big problems Egypt had and the Israelites had was bringing apart a mixed multitude, but that's for another day. But here we see that Yahweh is sanctifying. The same way. Go out to the streets today. What are the people doing? They're shopping, they're doing whatever, working. But Yahweh has sanctified us. He set us apart for this special day. And I will put a distinction between my people and your people. This miracle shall be for tomorrow. And Yahweh did so. And teeming swarms of flies came into Pharaoh's house and the house of the servants and all the land of Egypt. And the land was destroyed before the swarm of flies. Go to chapter 9. Verse 1, and Yahweh said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and say to him, so says Yahweh, the Elohim of the Hebrews, send away my people that they may serve me. And if you refuse to send away and still hold on to them, behold, the hand of Yahweh is going to be on your livestock in the field, on the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the herds, and on the flocks, a very heavy pestilence. And Yahweh will make a distinction between Israel's livestock and Egypt's livestock. Also, all that belongs to the sons of Israel, not a thing will die. So one thing that we see is, right, if you're not sanctified, then Yahweh can't make a distinction to you. You have to be sanctified from the world. You have to be separated. Because if you're not, when the plague comes on Egypt, you're going to be part of it. You need to be separated so Yahweh can sanctify you. And Yahweh set a time saying, tomorrow Yahweh will do this thing in the land. And Yahweh did this thing on the next day. And all the livestock of Egypt died. And from the livestock of the sons of Israel, not one died. And Pharaoh said, behold, not even one was dead from Israel's livestock. And Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not send away from the people. The other thing, like we said, never leave the camp. Your safety in the camp, outside the camp, you have trouble. And Yahweh said to Moses and to Aaron, take for yourself the fullness of your hands of soot from the furnace, and let Moses sprinkle it toward the heaven before Pharaoh's eyes. And let it become dust on all the land of Egypt, and let it become boils breaking out into sores on man and on livestock in all the land of Egypt. And they took soot of the furnace and stood before Pharaoh. And Moses sprinkled it toward the heavens, and it became a boil breaking out into sores on man and on livestock. And the priests were not able to stand before Moses because of the boils. For the boils were on the priests and on all the Egyptians. And Yahweh made heavy Pharaoh's heart, and he did not listen to them as Yahweh had said to Moses. And Yahweh said to Moses, get up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh, and you shall say to him, so says Yahweh, the Elohim of the Hebrews, send away my people that they may serve me. For at this time I am going to send all my plagues to your heart, and on your servants, and on your people, so that they may know that none is like me in all the land. For now I have sent forth my hand, and have stricken you and your people with pestilence, and you have been destroyed from the earth. And for this reason I have made you stand in order to cause you to see my power, and in order to declare my name in all the land. You still are exalting yourself against my people, so as not to send them away. You know, it's very interesting, because when he says to declare his name, they have, it's in Sudan today, in a town in the south there. Literally, it's one of, maybe the oldest in the world, of the name Yahweh. You know, it's not in Hebrew, so it's vowel pointed. They know it's Yahweh, it's not something else. And it's actually just a few years after this happened. So all throughout the earth, people knew what was going on. Another proof of the name of Yahweh going all the way back to the Exodus. And you can believe that no matter where you were in the world, like the Heavenly Father is saying here, everyone throughout the world is going to know that it's Him, Yahweh, that's doing this. And for this reason I make you stand in order to cause you to see my power, in order to declare my name in all the land. You still are exalting yourself against my people so as not to send them away. Behold, I will rain heavy hail about this time tomorrow, such as never been in Egypt from the day of its foundation until now. Drop down to verse 27. And Pharaoh sent and called Moses and Aaron and said to them, I have sinned this time. Yahweh is the righteous one, and I and my people the wicked ones. Drop down to verse 33. And Moses went out from Pharaoh from the city, and he spread out his hands to Yahweh, and the thunder of the hail ceased, and rain was not poured out toward the earth. And Pharaoh saw that the rain and the hail and the thunder had ceased, and he continued to sin. And he made his heart heavy, he and his servants. So we see very clearly here, right? Out of all these miracles, Pharaoh was not motivated by faith. Pharaoh was motivated by fear. And when you're motivated by fear, when the thing causing the fear is alleviated, you're going to go back to doing what you did before. So it's a lesson that we learn, that we need to be obedient because of faith in Yahweh, and not just because we fear something. I know many times people come to faith because of something end time. You know, maybe a war breaks out in Israel. Maybe there's something going on around the world. You know, we see many things happening. Maybe there's a big earthquake or tsunami like happened in 2006. And people, they'll think, you know, I've had people actually contact me throughout the years thinking that if they didn't get to Israel within a matter of days, that they were going to be trapped wherever they are. And that day will come someday. But we can't be motivated simply by fear. Fear is a good motivation to get you started. But if you don't have faith and you're only being motivated by fear, like I said, when the war ends, when the famine goes, when the earthquake is over, people are going to go right back to where they were before. So important lesson we learned. And now we go to Exodus 14, the parting of the Red Sea. Out of every miracle Yahweh did, probably by far the most amazing miracle that you can imagine, it's 900 feet in the center. When the Red Sea was separated, you know, from side to side, and it says the walls coagulated, they almost became like ice on the side. And the slope from there is a very gentle 5-degree slope going to the middle and going back to the other side, and it's like a land bridge. Because on both sides of that land bridge is, I forget how many feet, but it's thousands of feet straight down. But right in the middle of that land bridge is a very, very soft 5-degree angle for the people who walk. Exodus 14 and verse 5. And it was told to the king of Egypt, this is after they leave now, and Pharaoh again is hardening his heart. And it was told to the king of Egypt that the people had fled. And the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned toward as to the people. And they said, what is this we have done? For we have sent away Israel from serving us. And he prepared his chariots, and he took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots, and all the chariots of Egypt, and officers over all of them. And Yahweh hardened Pharaoh, king of Egypt's heart, and he pursued the sons of Israel, and the sons of Israel were going out with a high hand. And the Egyptians pursued them, and they overtook them camping by the sea. And all the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army by Pi-Hahiroth, we've been there many, many times, before Baal-Zephon. And Pharaoh came near, and the sons of Israel raised their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were pulling up after them, and they were greatly afraid. And the sons of Israel cried to Yahweh, and they said to Moses, were there no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? What is this you have done to us to bring us out of Egypt? Is this not the words which we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, go away from us and let us serve the Egyptians? For it is good for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. That page must have been ripped out of my Bible. Because I see where they're crying that they're being oppressed, you know, and all these other things, and crying to Yahweh. Now they're turning it the opposite and saying, hey, didn't we say it's not so bad over here? And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Take your stand and see the salvation, the Yeshua of Yahweh, which he will prepare to you today. For as you see the Egyptians today, you shall not continue to see them again forever. Yahweh will fight for you, and you be silent. Another big lesson we learned here. Sometimes we want to fight for ourselves, and then Yahweh stays silent, and he stands back, and he lets us fall. Just like, you know, when you have a child that's starting to walk, you got to let them try to walk on their own, and you got to let them learn how to fall, right? So that's what happens with Yahweh, that he does with us. But at the same rate, if we would simply be silent and give it into his hands, he would handle everything. Yahweh will fight for you and you be silent. And Yahweh said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Speak to the sons of Israel and let them pull up stakes. You know, and he's wondering, where? The sea is right in front of us, right? And you raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it so the sons of Israel may go in the midst of the sea on dry ground. And behold, I am making strong the heart of the Egyptians, and they will go after them. And I will be honored through Pharaoh and through his armies, through his chariots and through his horsemen. And the Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh in my being honored through Pharaoh, through his chariots and through his horsemen. And the messenger of Elohim withdrew, the one going before the camp of Israel. We know that to be Yeshua. And he went behind them. And the pillar of cloud withdrew before them, and it stood behind them. And it came between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israel. And it was cloudy and dark, and it lit up the night. And this one did not come near to that one all night. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and Yahweh caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all night. And he made the sea dry land, and the waters divided. And the sons of Israel came into the middle of the sea on dry ground, the waters being a wall to them from their right and from their left. And the Egyptians pursued, and all the horses of Pharaoh came after them, his chariots and his horsemen, into the middle of the sea. And it happened in the morning watch. Yahweh took on the camp of the Egyptians in the pillar of fire and cloud, and he confused the camp of the Egyptians. And he took off the wheels of their chariots and made them drive with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, I will flee from the face of Israel, for Yahweh is fighting for them against the Egyptians. And Yahweh said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea, and let the waters return on the Egyptians, on their chariots and on their horsemen. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its usual flow at the turning of the morning. And the Egyptians were fleeing to meet it. And Yahweh shook off the Egyptians into the middle of the sea. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen, together with all the army of Pharaoh, those going after them into the sea, and not even one was left among them. And the sons of Israel walked on dry ground in the middle of the sea, the waters being a wall for them from their right and from their left. And Yahweh saved Israel that day from the hand of Egypt, and saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. And Israel saw the great hand in which Yahweh worked against Egypt. And the people feared Yahweh, and the people in Yahweh and in his servant believed in Yahweh and in his servant Moses. Wow. Like I said, the most amazing story you will ever see in the Bible. Right after this, right, what are they saying? My strength and my song is Yah, and he was to me salvation. This is my Eli, and I will glorify him, the Eloah of my father, right? Yahweh is a man of war. Yahweh is his name. And they're all singing, and everything is hunky-dory for about 5 minutes. Because we go to Exodus 15, and we continue here in verse 22. And Moses made Israel to pull up from the Sea of Reeds, and they went out of the wilderness of Shur. And they went into the wilderness 3 days and did not find water. And they came to Marah, and they were not able to drink water from Marah, for it was bitter. Therefore one called its name Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? And he cried to Yahweh, and Yahweh showed him a tree, and he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. He made a statute and an ordinance for them there, and he tested them there. And he said, if you carefully listen to the voice of Yahweh your Elohim, and do what is right in his eyes, and you give ear to his commandments, and keep his statutes, I will not put on you all the diseases which I have put on Egypt, for I am Yahweh Rapha, Yahweh, your healer. So, wow! Witnessing firsthand the parting of the Red Sea after, you know, the 10 plagues of Egypt. And these people seeing, not only seeing the plagues, but seeing the plagues were only on the Egyptian side and not on their side. And what do they do within a matter of days? In a matter of days, they're complaining and they're murmuring. Wow. First step. Like I said, this is what's leading to what? What's the end result of this? 2 million people. Not a tithe, not 10%. Not 200,000 out of 2 million. Two. Caleb, Joshua. That's it. Two people out of 2 million make it into the promised land. And this is where it starts. It starts with a spirit of dissatisfaction, a spirit of unthankfulness, a spirit of uncontentment, and a spirit of murmuring. Exodus 16, one more chapter over. And they pulled up stakes from Elam, and all the congregation of the sons of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month. So this is only 1 month being out of Egypt after they're going out of the land of Egypt. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron in the wilderness. And the sons of Israel said to them, would that we have died by the hand of Yahweh in the land of Egypt, and are sitting in the flesh pots, and are eating bread to satisfaction. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill all this assembly with hunger. Wow. So now, they're not only blaming Moses, they're blaming Yahweh. They're saying, we had it pretty good over here. Why on earth would you take us out here to give us this? And we know, what does Moses say to them? Moses said to them, maybe I'll read it here. In verse 7, and in the morning you shall see the glory of Yahweh in his hearing, your murmurings against Yahweh. And we, what do we think you murmur against us? And Moses said, when Yahweh gives you flesh to eat in the evening and bread in the morning to satisfaction, when Yahweh hears your murmurings, which you are murmuring against him, you will see, what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against Yahweh. So very clearly, you know, like I said, there's a judicial order, and everybody in the body has spiritual gifts. You know, and if somebody has the responsibility of setting up the room, who are we to come and say, I would have did it different? Maybe the chair shouldn't be this way. If somebody has the responsibility that they're doing the music, for someone to say, oh, I would have picked different songs, right? It's outside of our judicial order. It's very clear. When we complain, we're not complaining against man, we're complaining against Yahweh. Very, very clearly. It's not against man, it's against Yahweh, it's a rebellious spirit. They love the ways of the world too much. They love the ways of the world too much. Go to chapter 17, we see it again. And you know something? It's not one spot. It's all over, over and over and over. And like I said, just keep thinking. 2 out of 2 million. And that's the main warning for us today. It doesn't say this is for the Waldenses in the wilderness. It doesn't say this is for the Paulicians when Constantine's Christianity is starting. It says this is written to the last generation. It's written to us today. Chapter 17. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel pulled up stakes from the wilderness of Sin, according to their journeys by the mouth of Yahweh. And they camped in Rephidim, and there was no water for the drinking of the people. And the people fought with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, why do you fight with me? Why do you tempt Yahweh? And the people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, why then have you caused us to come up from Egypt to kill me and my sons and my livestock with thirst? And Moses cried to Yahweh, saying, what shall I do with this people? Yet a little, and they will stone me. And Yahweh said to Moses, pass on in front of the people, and take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand your staff in which you smote the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall smite the rock, and water will come out of it. And the people will drink. And Moses did so before the elders of the eyes of the elders of Israel. And one called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because of the contention of the sons of Israel, and because of their testing of Yahweh, saying, is Yahweh in our midst or not? And amazingly enough, in our day, they've actually found this rock. The rock is there in Saudi Arabia. You know, I have a picture of it here inside. 75 feet high with a split right down the middle, with water erosion, sowing massive, massive amounts of water. And they're actually... did scans to find there's a gigantic mass of aquifer under there. And a place that only gets something like 3 centimeters of water a year. And that kind of erosion. But wow, and even so, it doesn't stop there. And that's what shows. It's a spirit, right? There's a reason why he said, Caleb and Joshua will come into the promised land because there's another spirit in there. There's another spirit in there. And I think sometimes, because like I said, we're living in a world, the Laodicean era, we're living in a world that's very corrupted, that we don't see that. And it's scary, because if you don't see there's a different spirit in you than somebody out that door, then maybe you don't have a different spirit. That's where you have to start questioning yourself. Because I know I have a different spirit than those people out there. I know my spirit isn't the same, because I see their actions, I see what they do. I see they're not serving Yahweh. And it's the very thing that kept these people out of the promised land. Now we get to Exodus 32, and this is the clincher. The golden calf didn't just happen. It wasn't by accident. It wasn't, you know, really that these people had a good heart, and they really were trusting in Yahweh. And all of a sudden, you know, Moses goes up the mountain, he doesn't come back, and now they're really wondering, you know, hey, he's never coming back. We've got to do something. We don't know what happens here. Now, we can see as we read chapter after chapter after chapter of the murmuring, the complaining, the accusing of Yahweh, the accusing of Moses, the accusing of Aaron, that this is not by accident. This is 100% the result that's going to come every single time of that spirit. Matter of fact, like I said, in 35 years in the faith, I've never seen once a good result come out of a murmuring spirit. Seen a lot of bad things come out of it, but never once did I ever see anything good come out of it. So this is something that should not surprise us when we get to Exodus 32. And the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, and the people gathered to Aaron. And they said to him, rise up, make for us gods who may go before our face. For this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has happened to him or what has become of him. And Aaron said to them, break off the rings of gold which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. And the people broke off the rings of gold in their ears, and they brought to Aaron. And he took them from their hand and formed it with an engraving tool, and he made it a casted calf. And they said, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt." And Aaron saw and built an altar before it, and Aaron called and said, "A feast to Yahweh tomorrow." So very interesting, right? What did these people do as soon as Moses was gone? Strike the shepherd and the people would be scattered. They went right back to what they knew. They never really came out of it, right? So they're part of the mixed multitude. You have a mixed multitude that aren't Israelites, but then you have Israelites that were really part of the mixed multitude. So as you're having this mixed multitude, because you could pretty much guarantee that the Egyptians that are with them are the ones that are urging them. You know, Moses isn't coming back. We got to make some kind of deity, or we're all going to die out here. So what do? They go right back to with the stink of what they knew in Egypt, just like the Apostle Peter says, like a dog to his vomit. And then they make this golden calf, and they call the golden calf Yahweh. No different today than people calling Yahweh G-O-D. No different today than people using pagan Christmas and Easter and all these other things, whatever paganism and blending it. It's a syncretism. But Yahweh doesn't accept it. He does not accept syncretism as worship of him. But again, what a lot of times causes that syncretism? The mixed multitude that brings it also. The golden calf, they call this pagan idol Yahweh, like I said, just as many Christians do today with syncretism. Deuteronomy 12 and verse 28, it's very clear that our Heavenly Father tells us that when we come into the faith, we are not to blend paganism with truth. Deuteronomy 12, 28. "Take heed to listen to all these words which I am commanding you, in order that it may be well with you and with your sons after you forever, when you do that which is good and right in the eyes of Yahweh your Elohim. When Yahweh your Elohim shall cut off the nations from before you where you are going to possess them, and you shall possess them and live in their land, take heed to yourself that you not be snared to follow them after they have been destroyed before you, and that you not inquire after their gods, saying, 'How did these nations serve their Elohim?' I shall do so, even I. You shall not do so to Yahweh your Elohim. For everything hateful to Yahweh which he detests, they have done to their gods. For they have even burned their sons and their daughters in the fire to their gods. All the things I command you, take heed to do them. You shall not add to it, and you shall not take away from it." So it's very clear. And this is where even crescent keeping comes from. The Canaanites were crescent keepers, you know, before Israelites came into the Promised Land. This is where a lot of the paganism, the cultic things, the blending of the worship comes in here. And in the world we're living in today, we deal with it a lot. Because before, if you go back 20, 30 years ago and before that, most people coming into the truth are coming from organized religion, Protestantism, Catholicism, you know, or some form of evangelical. And when they come in, they understand they got to start at ground zero. Today, because people are mixing and you have the internet, you'll have people that will come for maybe the strangest reason. Somebody may join our group simply because of the Temple Mount, you know, because I preach on the Temple Mount or something like that. But they might come in with false tongues, thinking a woman can be ordained, or a number of things. And the syncretism is everything dealing with the golden calf. They're not leaving behind their golden calf. They're taking them with them. And this is the point of this message, that each of us has got to look inside our hearts, and particularly during this time of unleavened bread, to see, what golden calf am I taking? What golden calf that is not part of the word of Yahweh, but maybe part of my culture, my belief system, my upbringing, am I trying to drag along into Yahweh's congregation? Numbers 14, because we see that this actually caused the Israelites to perish. Numbers 14, starting in verse 1. "And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried." And this is right after the spies come back, right? They're in the Promised Land. They're seeing a land with milk and honey. They're carrying grapes by a pole. And now they're coming back, and instead of giving a good report, this is what they said. They say that there's giants in the land. We can't take these people. They'll kill us. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept during that night. And the sons of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and all the congregation said to him, "Oh, that we had died in the land of Egypt or in the wilderness. Oh, that we had died. And why is Yahweh bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our infants have become a prey. Is it not good for us to return to Egypt?" And I'll tell you, through the years, I've heard many people at times try to make the comparison to say, "Well, you know, if I wasn't in Yahweh's congregation, I could be making all kinds of money. You know, I could be doing this." And it's almost the same thing that's going on here. Because anything you could have been outside of the calling of Yahweh, money-wise, whatever, it doesn't make a difference. It's nothing compared to what you are as a true covenant believer of Yahweh. So to even make that comparison, and I'm not saying necessarily in our congregation, but I used to hear this a lot in Church of God years back. People would say, "Oh, I was making this $100,000 a year, and I gave it all up for the Sabbath or for Yahweh." And it's like, no, you didn't. You would be, who knows where you'd be now, dead, divorced, you know, broken family, anything. But wherever you are in Yahweh's congregation is 1,000 times better than what you would have been out in the world. "And why is Yahweh bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our infants have become a prey. Is it not good for us to return to Egypt?" And they said each to his brother, "Let us give a leader and return to Egypt." Again, rebellion against judicial order. "And Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the assembly of the congregation and the sons of Israel. And Yehoshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, of those who spied out the land, tore their garments. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, 'The land into which we passed to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. If Yahweh is delighted in us, then he will bring us into this land and will give it to us, a land which is flowing with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against Yahweh, and you do not fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their defense has turned away from them, and Yahweh is with us. Do not be afraid of them.' And all the congregation said to stone them with stones." So here it is, the two that have the faith, that have another spirit, they're not saying, "You know what, maybe they're right." They're saying, "Kill them," right? So you got to see that in the world, the spirit that's going to be out there is going to be something that is not going to be convicted. It's going to be something that will bring more hatred against Yahweh's truth. "And the glory of Yahweh appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. And Yahweh said to Moses, 'Until when will this people despise me? And until when will they continue not to believe in me for all the signs I have done in their midst?'" And here we are. You know, each of us can probably get up here for hours, if not days, and tell all the miracles that Yahweh has done in our life. And I'm amazed at that sometimes. Over my years in the congregation, some of the people that had the strongest testimonies, sometimes testimonies even with cherubs and miraculous healings, have at times fallen away and completely left the faith. And I wonder, how on earth can that happen? Because they see the miracles and still they don't believe. Still they don't believe. And this is what he's saying. "How long will they continue not to believe me for all the signs I have done in their midst?" You know, and again, you see, but then you get so short-sighted that one thing doesn't go your way. One elder may offend you. One word by another brother or sister or you don't get recognition. And all of a sudden, everything becomes narrow and the person winds up falling in the wilderness, falling by the wayside. Verse 18, "Yahweh is slow to anger and great mercy, bearing away iniquity and transgression, and by no means will clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the sons on the third and fourth generation. I pray, forgive the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your mercy, and as you have done with this people from Egypt, even until now." And Yahweh said, "I have forgiven according to your word, but as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of Yahweh. And all the men who are seeing my glory and my miracles, which I've done in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tried me these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, They shall not see the land which I have sworn to their fathers. Yea, not one of those who provoke me shall see it. And my servant Caleb, because there's another spirit in him, he is fully following me. I shall bring him into the land into which he has gone, and his seed shall possess it. So, wow. What a lesson that we learn here. You know, you have to have that other spirit. Because if not, the spirit of the world, sooner or later, is going to overtake you. You know, you could fool each other, you could fool yourself, but you can't fool Yahweh. And unless you're humbling yourself and you're growing in the spirit of Yahweh, you have the possibility or high likelihood of having the same thing happen. And these people, it's not just that they lost out on a physical land, they will not be in the kingdom. These people lost out on salvation, as we'll see now as I read in Hebrews the 3rd chapter. Because they commit the unpardonable sin. They literally knew the glory of Yahweh through His Spirit, and they rejected it, they denied it, which is the unpardonable sin. Hebrews 3 and verse 7. Hebrews 3 and verse 7. He says, you made Him, look on verse 2, Hebrews 3 and verse 7. Because of this, even as the Holy Spirit says today, if you hear His voice, do not harden your hearts to provoke Him, as the murmurers did in the day of temptation or wilderness, which is reading it. There where your fathers tempted me, even though they saw my works for 40 years. Because of this, I was angry with that generation and said, they always go astray in their heart, and they did not know my ways. So I swore in my wrath, they will not enter my rest. They will not enter His millennium. Beware, lest my brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart which does not believe, and you will be cut off from the living Elohim. But search your hearts each day until the day which is called the day, that not any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Messiah, if truly from the beginning to the very end we hold steadfast to this true covenant. As in the saying today, if you hear even the echoes of His voice, do not harden your heart to anger Him. Who were those who heard and provoked Him? Was it not those who came out of Egypt through Moses, although not all of them? But with whom was He angry 40 years? Was it not with the one sinning whose bones lay in the wilderness? Some of us have seen some of those places and some of those graves right there in Kadesh Barnea. And to whom did He swear they would not enter His rest, except to those not obeying? See, so we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief. Therefore, let us fear, lest while the promise of entering into His rest remains, talking now about us entering into His millennium, lest some among you find they are falling short from entering. For indeed, we have had the good news preached to us, even as they also, but the word did not profit those hearing, not having been mixed with faith with the ones who heard. And then he talks about, so he swore His wrath, they will not enter His rest. So here we are. We're just like them. The word's preached to us. We believe it. We're convicted. We're walking on that road. But if it's not mixed with faith, there's nothing that'll happen. You'll fall away. If it's not mixed with faith, it's just like the parable of the sower and the seed. Parable of the sower and the seed. If something is on rocky ground, then what's going to happen? Something's on rocky ground, it's not going to take root. If it's in thorns, it's not going to take root. So I think as believers, and it's not for us to judge anyway, but I think sometimes when we're shocked, when people do fall away, we don't realize this. We don't realize, like, you could meet somebody who could seem like the most fervent believer in the world, they can be dedicated, but if it's on rocky ground or thorny ground, it's going to peter out. But as you go years by years by years, like I said, I'm 35 years walking in this now, you kind of see it. You see the warning signs. You see when people start, what's causing them to fall away. And in actuality, in the end, you find out most of the people that do fall away never had that different spirit to begin with. They always had that murmuring spirit. They always had that doubt inside their mind. They always had something that kept them back. They were just hiding it from each other, but they weren't hiding it from Yahweh. Hebrews 11 and verse 6. Hebrews 11 and verse 6 says, but without faith it is impossible to please Yahweh, for it is right that the one drawing near to Yahweh should believe that He is, and He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. I saw in Church of God when I was in the organization, there would be people who would come into the organization simply for position. They're coming in and they want position, so they stay and they try to work their way up. Maybe they get it. Maybe they get ordained a deacon or an elder, and then that makes them feel happy or whatever, and they stay a while. But if your motive for coming into the truth is not correct, you're going to fall by the wayside. It's one of the first things I say at the Bible school when I tell the people the same thing, that unless your motive as a believer and as a leader is 100% to serve Yahweh, you will burn out. There's no doubt about it. And now, in these days, you'll burn out faster than less. You know, before, maybe people burned out 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Today, it could be a matter of months or a year or two. You know, that you have to have the right motive, as we see. You don't want to be bringing in your golden calf. So my question is, we have to leave our golden calf behind. What is your golden calf? What is your golden calf that you built that you're replacing for faith in Yahweh? Just said they didn't enter because of a lack of faith. Is it money? Is it a job? Is it your family? Maybe your children, your husband, your wife? For some people, it's makeup, food, the internet, social media. These are things they can't leave behind. They have to hold on to them. Part of the world. Pride, self-righteousness, greed, fear. All these things are golden calves. They're all little golden calves that you don't realize, but you're bowing down to them every day of your life if you're not getting rid of them. And like I said, you may hide it, just like Achan when he hid it in his tent for a while, but you're never going to get away with it. Because one thing it does is, if you're in a congregation, it's going to take Yahweh's blessing away from that congregation, and sooner or later, Yahweh's going to expose it. Or you'll just peter out and move on and keep going because you'll be tortured by it. I've seen that happen. I've seen people enter our congregation, and the reason why they leave is they're tortured. They can't stay. Because when the Spirit of Yahweh is somewhere and somebody is a phony and a fake, they can't stay with that spirit. Sooner or later, they just got to run away from it because they're too convicted. So that's my question. What is the golden calf that you're not leaving beyond? Something every one of us, like I said, it's for us to go in our prayer closets and to ask Yahweh. If we saw 9 miracles, like we read, but one lacked, would you have turned back? Would you have murmured? Would you be bitter? And before you answer that really quick, I'm telling you, this happens all the time. Because every one of us has a miracle of coming to faith. We all give testimonies every week. And I've heard a lot of the brethren's testimonies that are absolutely awesome. And as we do this, people will always say, I'm so encouraged when we give testimony, right? And we'll hear literally miracles in some of those testimonies. And like I said, I've seen people that came to faith by a miracle. They either lost their job or got a new job because the Sabbath over a miracle. It was a miracle how Yahweh called them. It was a miracle how He maybe saved them from not losing their house or whatever else it is. And you see miracle after miracle after miracle. But then, one little thing that happens, right? They make a suggestion that isn't given. You know, something with the calendar, you know, that wasn't taken, their suggestion. Whatever it might be. You know, somebody else was ordained a deacon instead of them. Some little tiny thing happens, and they forget all the other miracles that Yahweh has done. Every single thing. And we have to ask ourselves, do we have a spirit of thankfulness? And this is one thing I say with the third world brethren. They're not perfect. They got their own problems. There's a lot of things they're doing. But one thing I say is, I never, ever, ever, no matter what third world I'm in, I never see them with a spirit of unthankfulness or ever complaining about anything. I said, some of these men I've known for years, you know, many, many, many years. And until maybe we're traveling and we're in an airplane together, I'm finding out, wow, they lost 3 children. You know, that this happened. You know, that they had so much suffering in their life and they never ever brought it up once. Because their focus is always on the kingdom of Yahweh. It's always serving somebody else. They have a different spirit. Like Caleb has a different spirit. And this is what we have to be striving for. Because this is what Yahweh is. He's a kingdom. He's not a religion. And we have to strive for that kingdom mentality. That kingdom mentality of losing ourselves, of not trying to make ourselves more important than what we are, and trying to serve within that confine that Yahweh wants us to have. So if we saw the 9 miracles and lacked one, would we forget the 9? and have no thankfulness. Like I said, almost anybody that comes into this congregation comes into it because they're seeing the videos online, or maybe they come to a feast, but there's hardly, I would say 99% of the people that come in this ministry, they come in because they believe we're part of prophecy. They see the work, and that's why I say I don't have to prove anything to anybody. We're doing this for 20 years, and it's impossible for even me to just be standing here, you know, as a non-Jew, to be living in this land this long. Starting out, it's basically two homeless missionaries that are living in the hospital right next door to here. And then Yahweh builds this into a worldwide work all over the world, calling people from everywhere, from Jerusalem. The miracles that he's done, the tabernacle of David, so many things, and almost everybody. And yet, people will forget all that and leave over the dumbest thing. And most of the time, what I've seen, it really has nothing to do with me or the ministry. It has to do with people in their lives not dealing with problems. The cares of the world, you know? You get soaked into the cares of the world. Maybe you're working too many hours. Maybe you're not caring for your family. Whatever it is, something in the world is pulling them apart. And before you know it, they can't leave the golden camp behind. They lose their focus, and then the real spirit who they are comes out. And this is why I say, leaving your golden calf behind is life or death, because you're not going to go into the kingdom with that golden calf. You're certainly not going to go into it. We have to now get rid of that golden calf, or we could be left behind. All of us, like I said, every one of us has miracles to tell of our story, how Yahweh called us. And we should be thanking him every single day. Write down your miracles. Keep them in a journal. Read them every day. You gotta keep encouraging yourself, trusting him for everything. Or are you murmuring and doubting, just like the Israelites, replacing Yahweh for a golden calf, but still using his name? Like I said, they called the golden calf Yahweh. They didn't call it something else. You know, they had the bulls of Egypt, the names of their different deities that they had there, but they weren't called. They're calling this golden calf, they're calling it Yahweh. And sometimes we could be doing the same. Luke 9 and verse 57. Luke 9 and verse 57. He says, "And it happened as they were going in the way, one said to him, 'I will follow you everywhere you may go, Master.' And Yeshua said to him, 'Foxes have holes, birds of the heaven have nests, but the Son of Man is nowhere where he may lay his head.' And he said to another, 'Follow me.' But he said, 'Master, allow me to go first, bury my father.' But Yeshua said to him, 'Leave the dead to bury their dead. Going out, you announce the kingdom of Yahweh.' And also another said, 'I will follow you, Master, but first allow me to take leave of those in my house.' But Yeshua said to him, 'No man places his hand upon the handle of a plow and looks backward and is useful for the kingdom of Yahweh.'" Right? Now, he wasn't saying, just let me go home and say goodbye for 5 minutes, you know, not that he's just going to disappear. He's basically saying, you know, let me go back, and then when my dad dies or my mom dies or whatever responsibility, you know, then I'll be part of it. And this is what Yeshua is saying. No man that puts his handle to the plow and looks backward is used. Why? Because if you know anything about plowing, if you're trying to plow and you ever look back, you're going to zigzag all over the place. And that's the way a lot of people's lives are. They're zigzagging. They're zigzagging, you know. There's people I know that I love, but for years, it's the same thing. Always struggling. Always unhappy. Always, you know, struggling with a problem. And you got to say to yourself, we all go through problems. I've gone through in my life. But if this is year after year after year after year that there's only struggling and hardship, where is the joy? Right? Yeshua came to give us life and give it more abundantly. And yes, every one of us, like I say with giving, you should never always be the receiver, you should never always be the giver. There's a time to give, there's a time to receive. But it's the same way with grief. If you are always grieving and always unhappy and always with a problem, you have to start thinking something is wrong. It's not the spirit of Yahweh. The spirit of Yahweh is the spirit of joy and love, and peace, and patience, and long-suffering, right? There could be a golden calf, you know, in your tent. Maybe it's buried real deep. But like I said, you got to dig it up. You got to get that golden calf out, because you're not going to go in the kingdom of Yahweh with it. 2 Peter 2. 2 Peter 2. We want to make sure we're not looking back. That's another thing. You know, sometimes people will want to talk about their past and talk about this. And we know that the past doesn't matter, it's the future. The past doesn't equal the future. And that's what Satan wants to do. He wants us to live in continual guilt. He wants us to think that because things happened in the past, we can never repent, we can never move on. But we see here from Luke 9, when you look back, not only do you go zigzag in every direction, right? But when you're looking back, you're not looking forward. You're never going to overcome. You're never going to become the person Yahweh wants you to be if you're constantly looking behind in your life. We have to be looking ahead. 2 Peter 2, 20-22. For if when they have escaped the pollutions of the world by the knowledge of our Master and Redeemer, Yeshua the Messiah, they become again entangled in the same things and are overcome by them, their later end is worse with them than the beginning. For it was better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than having recognized it to turn from the holy commandment delivered to them. But the word of the true proverb has happened to them. The dog returns to his old vomit, also the sow that was washed through wallowing in the mud. And unfortunately this happens. Parable of sowing seed. If your seed is not on good soil, if it's on thorns, if it's on rocks, then this is what's going to happen. When it doesn't take root, you're going to go back to what you know, right? That's the way our mind works. We're conditioned. That's why I say whatever you focus on becomes most real to you. And it's with the way Yahweh made us. And when you see the Israelites, what's the first thing they're doing? They're making a golden calf. That's all they know. They didn't know anything else. And this is what will happen. If you don't get deep roots in that new spirit, you'll go back to the old spirit. You gotta leave your golden calf behind. We already know already when people are called. Again, it's not for us to decide who is wheat and who is chaff. I think Yahweh makes that evident himself. But just the fact that the Bible tells us, you know, it always seems to be at least 50-50. You know, we have to realize that not everybody that comes in your midst is part of you anyway. You know, some are, some aren't. And of course, we grieve when people do fall away. But at the same rate, you know, they may have never been part of the congregation to begin with. 1 John 2 in verse 18, he says, little children, it is the last hour. And as you have heard, the anti-Messiah is coming. Even now, many anti-Messiahs have risen up, from which you know that it is the last hour. They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they were of us, they would have remained with us. But they left so that it might be revealed that they are not all from us. And this is what happens. Sometimes people come in and their heart may be right, but they're coming in with their golden calf. And sooner or later, that golden calf will destroy them, the same way it will for us. And we have to make sure that we're not taking that golden calf with us. So, again, this could be life or death. Philippians 4 and verse 4. Philippians 4 and verse 4. And like I said, I'm a person of odds and probability. And when I look at 2 out of 2 million, I don't like those odds. But it should motivate us. You know, it should motivate us to be striving to be the Caleb spirit, to be the Yehoshua spirit. Philippians 4 and verse 4. He says, rejoicing Yahweh's always. Again, I say rejoice. Let your humility be known to all men. Our Master is at hand. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and by petition with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to Elohim. And the peace of Yahweh, which surpasses all understanding, will keep your hearts and your minds through Yeshua Messiah. This has got to be our focus. You know, like I said, we're human beings. We're going to go through things, even death. And we will sorrow at times, but don't let that sorrow overwhelm you. We have to be focused on blessings. We have to be focused on thankfulness to Yahweh. These are the things. Drop down to verse 11. Not that I speak as to need, for I've learned to be content in whatever state I am in. For I know what it is to be poor, and I know what it is to be rich. I've gone through many things and experienced many things, both to be filled and to hunger, both to have plenty and to be in need. I can do all things through Messiah, the one giving me strength. The very scripture we use at the school as our motto there. But this is where, if your focus is money and possessions and mammon, then you will get depressed when you don't get it. But we have to have this mindset here. There's going to be times in our life when we might have abundance. There might be times when we have less. But as long as your focus is on the kingdom, you will always have abundant blessings. Because your blessings are always going to be in the things that are not tangible. Your blessings will be in the nine fruits of the Spirit. Your blessings are going to be in the fellowship of other brethren. Your blessings are going to be in Yahweh living inside of you. And then you're never going to falter. But if they are on mountain things, then when things are going good, you'll be up. And when things are going bad, you're going to be down. We got to leave the golden calf behind. We have to be content in every situation, trusting that Yahweh allowed whatever it is for our benefit. There's times where it's to our benefit to lack, that Yahweh wants us to know that. 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 7. 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 7. It says, "And by the superabundance," this is the Apostle Paul speaking, "of the revelations, that I not be made arrogant, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan," a demon was torturing him, "that he might buffet me, that I not be made haughty. Beyond this, I entreated our master three times to depart from me. And he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient to you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will rather gladly boast in my weaknesses, that the power of Messiah may rest upon me. Because of this, I am pleased in weaknesses, in insults, in dire needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for the sake of Messiah. For when I am physically weak, then I am spiritually strong." So, a lot of times in this world, when Yahweh is allowing persecution on us, you know, face it, we've had very little persecution as believers compared to what people have had in the past. You know, where they're getting tortured, crucified, all these other things. But it may come. It could come at any time. It may not come in your lifetime, but it can come tomorrow. And for us, we have to have that mindset that whether we glorify Yahweh through the freedoms we have now, going out here and witnessing of His name, and witnessing in our life how we love our neighbors, ourselves, or if we'll glorify Him by martyrism, whatever it is, you know, that we have to love Him and we have to honor Him and thank Him in any given situation. And like I say, the golden calf will stop you, because whatever that golden calf is, that's the thing that's going to stop you from being focused and having this attitude. Grace is enough. Promises of the kingdom. These things are for our humbling. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1. 2 Timothy 3, 1. "But know this, in the last days, disastrous times will be upon us. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, braggarts, arrogant, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, wicked, without natural feeling, addicted to lust, slanderers, without self-control, savage, haters of good, always striving to learn, but never able to come to the full knowledge of the truth." And this is in believers. This is not in the world. Look what he says. "Now as Jannes and Jambres stood up against Moses, so do these also withstand the truth. Men of corrupt minds and far off from the faith." Right? These are men that want to fight leadership. And again, you know, I always say, like it or don't like it, I'm doing the same thing for 35 years and 23 years in ministry. I'm doing the same thing. I haven't changed anything. If anything, I've only through the years have, I believe, gotten more humble and understand Yahweh's Spirit better. But there's people that will come in and you're doing the same exact thing, and all of a sudden, several years later, you're a monster, you're this, you're a dictator, you're all this. And it's all coming because they didn't leave their golden calf behind. It's not that I'm doing anything different or you're doing anything different. It's that they didn't leave the golden calf behind. And now it comes back to bite them. Because if they felt that way, why did they ever come in to begin with? Whatever motive it was. They came in thinking, you know, there's people that come in here thinking they're only coming here just to change a doctrine. And they think they can do it. Or like I said, you're usurping a position. They want to be an elder. And when they don't get what they want, then all of a sudden, they're going to battle this way. But again, like it said back in Exodus 16, we're not fighting man, we're fighting Yahweh. You know, Yahweh puts the man in the position, and either we surrender to Yahweh's judicial order, or we're fighting the order of Yahweh. That's why I don't take it personal. I feel bad when people have a rebellious spirit. I feel really bad. I pray for them. But I know one thing. You're not going to walk in the kingdom of Yahweh with that golden calf. There's no way on earth. You know, because where is it going to lead to? Because it doesn't stop with one person, one situation, one doctrine. It continues everywhere they go. And that's the point. If you have a golden calf, it's going to follow you through your whole life. And if you don't get rid of it, in the end, you won't make it. So let's see, what do we do with the golden calf? Let's go back to Exodus 32. We'll be ending here shortly, relatively speaking. Exodus 32. What did Moses do with the golden calf? Exodus 32 and verse 15. And Moses turned and went down from the mountain. The two tablets of the testimony in his hand, tablets written on the two sides, on this and on that side they were written. And the tablets were the work of Elohim, and the writing was the writing of Elohim. It was engraved on the tablets. And Yehoshua heard the voice of the people and their shouting. And he said to Moses, a sound of war in the camp. And he said, it's not a sound of the cry of might, nor a sound of a cry of defeat. I am hearing the sound of singing. And it happened as he came near the camp and saw the calf and the dances, and the anger of Moses glowed, and he threw the tablets from his hands and he broke them below the mountain. And he took the calf which they had made, and he burned it with fire and ground it until it was fine. Then he scattered it on the face of the water, and he made the sons of Israel to drink of it. That's what you have to do with your golden calf. Now, it's like I said, no one knows what your calf is. You know, the golden calf is maybe hidden in your tent, and it's hidden underneath whatever. And it's not for us to say, I know your golden calf. Each of us have to look in our hearts. But if you don't take that calf and completely destroy it, and then what? You're going to have to drink the bitter water from it. You know, I said that. Somebody comes into the truth, right? And when they come into the truth, maybe they were committing fornication or whatever, and they have something like AIDS. Well, yes, you're forgiven when you come in, but being baptized doesn't do away with the AIDS or cancer or anything else. We reap what we sow. There are times Yahweh does miracles, but most of the time he lets us reap what we sow because that's the only way we're going to learn. So don't be discouraged when you're drinking the bitter water of your golden calf. It's part of it. It's how you're going to learn. You know, you reap what you sow. It's Yahweh's way. But you've got to destroy that calf first. If you don't destroy the calf and suffer the consequences of the bitter water, you're not going to make the kingdom. It's that simple. 2 out of 2 million. And this is the time. We've got to get rid of that golden calf. And Moses said to Aaron, what has this people done to you that you have made to come on them a great sin? And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord grow. You know the people that it is evil, just like we're reading the people in the end time, right? They're evil. These people were evil. Evil people are not going to make the kingdom. And that's why only two of those people went to the promised land, because they were evil. And we're living in the same kind of evil age. And they said to be made for us gods who may go before us. For as Moses, the man who caused us to go up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what happened or became of him. And I said to him, whoever has gold, let him break it off. And they gave it to me, and I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. And if you believe that, I got a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn. You know, that he just threw it in, and the calf just happened to come out of there. And Moses saw the people, that they were naked, for Aaron had led them naked for scornful shaming among their enemies. They were naked. They had no covering, right? Because once you have your golden calf, you become your own Elohim. You know, a dumb little idol that's made out of gold, nobody really thinks that's an Elohim. They become their own Elohim. And that's why they're fighting against leadership that Yahweh put. That's why they're fighting against this. This is why, because they want to be their own Elohim. And they become naked. They have no covering anymore. And Moses stood at the gate of the camp and said, who is for Yahweh? Come to me. And all the sons of Levi, the priests, assembled to him. And he said to them, so says Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, each one put his sword in his thigh, pass to and from the gate in the camp, and each one kill his brother and his neighbor, and each one his kindred, right? Bad communications ruin good habits, you know? And people that are not with the program, people that have a golden calf, people that have contrary doctrine, people that are against leadership in congregations, man, they will take you right out of the truth. They'll take you right out of the truth. You know, it's not the voice of Yahweh that's going to draw people out for the people that are out there with the Laodicean spirit. And unfortunately, sometimes it's our family or friends. It could be anybody. It doesn't make a difference. And the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and about 3,000 men of the people fell on that day. And Moses said, fill your hand today for Yahweh, since each one has been against his son and against his brother, and in order to give you a blessing today. And it happened on the morrow, the next day, Moses said to the people, you have sinned a great sin. And now I will go up to Yahweh. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin. And Moses went back to Yahweh and said,
Oh, this people have sinned a great sin, and they have made for themselves gods of gold. And now, if you will, lift up their sin, and if not, I pray, blot me out from your book, which you have written. A real shepherd. Moses, a real shepherd there for the people. And Yahweh said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, I will blot from my book. And now go, lead the people to that place which I have spoken to you. Behold, my messenger, Yeshua, will go before your face. And in the day of my visitation, I will visit their sin on them, right? They're going to reap what they sow. And Yahweh plagued the people because they made the calf which are in me. So, serious thing, like I said, the golden calf is already built for each of us. It's something different, but we have to really seek Yahweh's face. We have to find what it is. We have to destroy it. And like I said, whatever bitter water is there, you got to drink the bitter water. But you know what? It'll pass. Everything you drink and everything you eat will pass. We know that. I'm not going to get any more detail about how it passes, but it will pass. So if you have to go through a short temporary period, you know, of the consequences of drinking the bitter water of the golden calf, so be it. But once it passes, then you're going to be like Caleb and like Joshua. The last scripture is in Philippians 3, starting in verse 4. Because this is the spirit we want to have. We want to have that other spirit. We want to be like Caleb and Joshua. We want to be surrendering to Yahweh. We want to allow His Spirit to be changing our life. We want the nine fruits of the Spirit to be growing in us. Philippians 3 and verse 4. And yet I might place reliance on the flesh. This is Paul talking again. For if anyone thinks that his reliance should be on the flesh, I might do so more than he. I was circumcised on the eighth day, being of the race of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of the Hebrews, according to the Torah, a Pharisee. According to zeal, persecuting the congregation, according to the standard of righteousness in the Torah, being blameless. But these things which were once a gain to me, I counted a loss for the sake of Messiah. Does it sound like Paul had some golden calves he had to get rid of? Absolutely. Absolutely. But he did it very early on in his ministry that helped him become the person he was. You know, there were golden calves he had to destroy. But no, rather, I also count all things to be lost because of the excellency of the knowledge of Messiah Yeshua, my Master, for whose sake I have suffered the loss of all things and count them to be trash, that I might gain Messiah and be found in Him, not having my own righteousness of law by Torah, but through the faith of Messiah, having the righteousness of Elohim on faith, the key to this whole message. And through this righteousness, that I may know Yeshua in the power of His resurrection and be a partaker of His sufferings, even to a death like this. So it should humble us, like we were talking yesterday. The fact that we can't do it on our own. There is no law I can keep that will give me eternal life and salvation, but it's through His resurrection and it's through His death that this is coming. If somehow I may attain to the resurrection from the dead, not that I already received or already have been perfected, but I press on. I also may lay hold, inasmuch as I also was laid hold on by Messiah Yeshua. Brothers, I do not count myself to have reached the goal. Neither of us have. None of us have. But one thing I do, forgetting the things behind and stretching forward on those things before. And this is the key to the message, that Yahweh forgets our sins, right? From the east to the west, He remembers them no more. But you want to know something? Satan doesn't forget your sins. Satan's been there from creation. He knows, and he wants to bring them up. And we're living in a world that is just vile like this. All over the internet, every day. It doesn't matter whether you're a politician, sports player, anything. You know, they want to put your sins on the internet. They want to browbeat you. And where things that Yahweh has forgotten, human beings want to bring up. And it's evil. It's absolutely evil in the eyes of Yahweh. It's part of destroying the golden calf. Because once you destroy it, it's gone. It's not there anymore. And like it says, Yahweh doesn't remember it. For human beings, there's people that's their whole job. They're not reporters. You know, their whole job is just digging up dirt on people. And then Paul says the opposite. That we're to destroy the golden calf, and then we're to forget it. One thing I count myself to reach the goal, but the one thing I do, forgetting the things behind, stretching forward to those things before, I press toward the goal to receive the prize of the victory of the highest calling of Elohim, Messiah Yeshua. The Israelites never did this. They never looked forward to the promised land. They keep looking backward to Egypt. every time a promise came up, instead of having faith with Yahweh and a little bit of patience, every single time they kept talking about going back to Egypt, going back to Egypt. And we need to look forward because the kingdom is just over the horizon. Then as many as are perfect, think about these things. And if you think anything differently, Elohim will also reveal this to you. Yet as to where we have arrived, walk by the same rule, being of the same mind. Be fellow imitators of me, brothers, and consider those walking this way, even as you have for a pattern, and praise Yahweh today. There's not just a Caleb and a Joshua. Yahweh has a congregation. He has many brothers and sisters that we can rely on, and we can support each other, and we can help each other and give words of encouragement, right? So that we grow in this spirit. For many walk as enemies to the torture stake of Messiah, of whom I've often told you, and now even weeping I say it, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, who glory in their shame, the ones thinking on earthly things. But our citizenship is in heaven, from where we also wait for a Savior, the Master Yeshua Messiah, who will transform our body of humiliation to the likeness of his glorious body, according to his mighty power, to be able even to subject all things under him. Wow. What a powerful way to end this message here. We must be mature and take responsibility for the actions of our golden calf. And we must move ahead to the high calling of Messiah and the Melchizedek priesthood. We have to put our golden calf behind. We have to destroy it. We have to completely get rid of it. And in some cases, even drink the bitter water. We have to get the kibbutz, the community mindset. We have to sanctify ourselves from the world. And we have to prepare to enter Yahweh's rest. We need to learn the lessons from the Israelites and make our Most High calling short. Hatzameh.